It's a show all about cannabis and hemp and wellness, and Dr. Denise Foster is with you. I'm Lee Foster, no relation. Dr. D is the one with all the knowledge. I'm just the guy who knows how to push the buttons. Dr. D, she's got more than 35 years of medical experience, and even more than that if you include her time as a cannabis nurse, of which she's spent the last 10 years or so. And she is from Hemp Haven Wellness. They just moved below the border, formerly in Chesapeake, until the state of Virginia decided to get a little big for its britches, I guess. And so now she is just below the border. She is in Moyock, North Carolina, 726 Caratoke Highway. And her number, 252, because it's right below the border. 252-340-3557. HempHavenWellness.com is her website. And then, of course, we do the podcast together, Cannabis Nurse Truths. I could ramble on and on about all the stuff, but before I keep going, let's actually hear your voice.
Good afternoon.
What's going on?
What a beautiful afternoon in Hampton Roads. I think we're finally getting out of the cold, wet, rainy, windy. I think this has been the windiest spring I've known in a long time. But things are going well now.
Things are. And how long have you been down in North Carolina now? Like a couple months, I think, right?
Yeah, we got our certificate of occupancy in February, and then we, you know, hot and heavy trying to get open. And so we've really been operational, maybe I would say a little less than 2 months.
Yeah.
So it's starting to pick up steam as the locals come. And of course, our wonderful clients from Virginia have followed us down there. Happy that we're down there now.
Anybody who went to the shop in Chesapeake, if you haven't been to the new one yet, it's just a little bit further south. It's not that much. That's not that far. This new location brings a lot more with it. It's bigger, a lot more room for activities. Tell me all the new stuff that you have going on at the new location that you didn't have at the Chesapeake spot.
My biggest bonus is that I was able to build out a private consultation room. This was something that I had to do, that my cannabis nurses and I had to sit out in the middle of our shop to talk to these individuals who wanted these free cannabis consultations, because there are a lot of questions as people consider how these, this is a paradigm shift, and there are a lot of questions. Is it good for me? Is it interfering with my prescription medicines? What if I pass, do I have to use THC? And what if I test positive on a drug test? We certainly don't want you to lose your job.
Right.
So there's a lot of questions. And when I was able to build out the space in Moyock, I was able to plan in a private consultation room. And this is, I think, one of the happiest things for us as cannabis nurses, because now we can really focus on helping each individual. And when we help individually, that's the heart of nursing. Cannabis nurses are here to first educate individuals, educate our healthcare peers and our communities, but also to advocate and coach and help individuals understand how these compounds can be used appropriately and safely. And in my shop down in Moyock, we do this from hemp, which has been federally legal since 2018 when they enacted the 2018 Agriculture Improvement Act.
That is one of the biggest misnomers that we are still trying to explain to people. Everything you sell in your shop is legal. It was legal when it was in Virginia. It's legal now.
Federally legal.
It's all federally legal. Has been since 2018. So lest anybody think otherwise, you know, just get that out of the way right away. And when you go down there, these consultations, you can do it in person, as you mentioned, Monday through Friday. But you have an additional day now where you do it virtually. You can do that on Saturdays too. So 6 days a week now you can do it.
We're building cannabis nurses as a profession, a profession as a whole. In 2023, the American Nurses Association recognized cannabis nursing as the newest subspecialty of nursing. Nurses are tired. Nurses are overworked. Nurses are finding it more difficult and challenging to balance life and work, especially in today's healthcare environments. And that's where I offer a course every January and every September, where you take a 6-week online Cannabis 101 course. You can find it on Eventbrite. So our next course round is going to be in September. And I have educated enough cannabis nurses through those courses that several of them have opted to begin working as cannabis nurses, and they're practicing now in the Moyock location. I brought all the cannabis nurses down with me, and they are now educating and working with clients on a regular basis, where you can have a free consultation Monday through Friday. The nurses are only working 11 to 5, so no weekends, no holidays, no night shift on call.
Yeah.
And then I just recently implemented a cannabis nurse health model where I now am offering, we are now offering virtual consultations on Saturdays. I realized that many people cannot get their consultation between 11 and 5, Monday through Friday. Work, family, kids going to soccer practice, etc. So Saturday, we have opened up virtual consultations, and I have cannabis nurses that are now able to meet with individuals either via phone or we have virtual meetings. Think of your Zoom meetings, etc. And that is something that is now available and can be scheduled on Saturdays. The demand continues to grow for this type of service because there's no one out there willing to talk to the people. The doctors yeah. say, I don't know, and that's not their fault in most cases. We're approaching the cannabinoid industry as a whole from the government perspective is that we're criminals until it is federally legal. That's where the debate is right now at the Health and Human Services and the DEA level. But when we think about how this type of head-in-the-sand approach at these entities, either healthcare or the federal government, even state governments, this does not align with the demand that we're seeing. We've talked before about how now almost 77% of Americans, 77% of Americans have access to marijuana in some form or another. And I'm talking legal cannabis. I'm talking either medical or adult use. So these entities, these populations and states where it has been legalized, there's a lot of people using it. The disconnect is that there are not a lot of people able to talk to these people about these concerns and questions that they have. And that's, right. I think, one of our biggest things. We're still delivering to Virginia Beach, Norfolk, and Chesapeake. And now we're delivering to areas around Moyock. We're delivering as far west as Elizabeth City, and we're delivering as far south as Grandy to capture that population because, again, we're realizing that many of our clients who are using this as true medicine, that's the medical model, but now we're talking hemp, they are more than likely older and they don't want to drive or they're on limited income and sure. they can't afford the gas money. So we're willing to bring those products to the individuals.
And when you say deliver, you're talking in terms of it's Hemp Haven. You guys are literally delivering it to customers like same day or next day, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And if people are outside of the range of that, you can still order by mail
yes,
on the website.
Because we can ship to all 50 states. I've shipped to Alaska and Hawaii. I've been asked if I can ship to Canada or Mexico. I've had to say no. I'm not getting into international laws.
Right.
But we know that these compounds are 100% legal across the United States. And because of their federal regulations, there is no such thing as interstate trafficking. That is marijuana. And that's why, for instance, when you're growing marijuana in Colorado to dispense at either a medical or an adult use dispensary, marijuana has to stay in Colorado because it is federally legal. That's where the state disparity runs, the state versus the federal. You know, we talk about the schizophrenic States of cannabis. States are in direct violation of federal law, and therefore they are not allowed to sell their marijuana outside state borders. It's a very confusing time for individuals, and much of our work, much of our practice as cannabis nurses is focused on education. And so we first have to educate ourselves, we have to educate our peers, our population, and we also have to understand that the research in this area continues to advance rapidly while the regulations typically lag. Oh my goodness, they lag.
Yep, government is always, you know, about 50 miles per hour behind everybody else. That's typically how it works. So if you have any questions in the realm of cannabis, in the realm of hemp, in the realm of anything, that's what cannabis nurses are for. That's what Dr. D is for. We're here. We're live, 757-627-7979. And also, go see her at Hemp Haven, hemphavenwellness.com. And once again, her address, 726 Caratoke Highway, just below the border in Moyock, North Carolina. So, a lot of news we could get to. Where should we begin?
Oh, my goodness. The overwhelming consensus and trend is that cannabis is very popular around the United States.
I've noticed.
I've noticed too. And that's what made me decide, despite all of the challenges and roadblocks and pitfalls, I decided to pack up and flee Virginia for North Carolina because I can't abandon these individuals. Many of these individuals are finding wellness for the first time, in some cases for many acute and chronic conditions. And so this is where the industry as a whole is starting to pick up steam. It's our theme song, you know, there's no stopping us now. That's no more evident than news that just was released about a week ago that the alcohol industry, hello, ABC of Virginia, the alcohol industry has been in Washington last week and they have lobbied Congress. What do they want? They want to regulate hemp-derived cannabinoid beverage products, like I sell in my shop.
Right.
So they're starting to pay attention to the numbers that are shifting dramatically away from alcohol, and people are finding that these hemp-derived cannabis-infused beverages fill a void for them. There's no hangover, there's no liver impairment and liver concerns, because of course we know that that over time leads to an accumulated liver problem. And we know that these compounds are 100% safe. Research has shown that a 280,000 milligram dose per day of THC is approaching your fatal dose. 280,000 milligrams. The typical average beverage in my shop is anywhere between 5 to 10 milligrams. That's a long way from 280,000 milligrams.
Yeah.
And when you consider when you infuse that beverage, you've now created a different way to use it in the body, meaning that more than likely, all you need is one. You don't need a six-pack. You don't need a couple scotches or, you know, I'm a 2-martini limit person.
Yeah, right.
I need 2 martinis and I'm good.
Right.
With this, you find that, you're back to what we consider individualized medicine. Cannabis is quickly becoming what the pharmaceutical industry has been seeking for decades. That is a model known as personalized, individualized medicine. Between an individual's genetics, metabolism, their conditions, their age. These are things that all have an impact and influence how in pharmaceutical world, pills, medicines work in the body. It's no different in this drug world. And so when you consider that there are over 150 cannabinoids that we have discovered to date, each one of these is going to have an effect in different ways in different people. And again, we're back to why we love to meet with individuals one-on-one to not only answer their questions, but to identify, this particular compound is not the right one for you. This one would be much better because we're trying to avoid a specific effect.
That's where the cannabis nurse comes in. If you want something for back pain or joint pain, it's this. If you want something for a headache, if you want something for anxiety, it's this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Back to this lobbying. So the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America met with lawmakers who should have, you know, branding of pharmaceuticals and now alcohol industries on their suit jackets. They state that one of the priorities for them in asking Congress to move the hemp-derived cannabinoid beverage industry into the Congress and laws is because they would love to establish state-level power to regulate retail sales. Where have I heard this before? Isn't that our ABC model?
Yeah.
State level power to regulate sales. So this is where the alcohol industry is beginning to pay attention to the little dent in the armor, the little niche in the armor where the cannabis beverage industry is beginning to overtake alcohol. And by 2030, cannabis beverage sales are predicted to reach $4 billion in the United States. Here's a money quote. The group's executive vice president of communications and marketing, named Michael Bolello, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, said that the message to lawmakers was clear. Federal regulation of hemp-derived beverages is essential, and cannabis should be regulated and enjoyed responsibly by adult consumers. What? This is the alcohol's blessing. that cannabis, cannabinoid and beverages in this case, are just the same, if not better, than alcohol. And they want in on the action. The group contends that with the many decades of proven compliance, they are best positioned to sell these products. What, like I can't card somebody and make sure that they're legal yeah. and allowed to buy this? I can't be compliant. This is, again, back to medical marijuana and adult use marijuana in states where it's been legalized. They've done audits. They've done spot checks where they've sent in teenagers underage trying to purchase cannabis products from these legal dispensaries. And 100% compliance means that in every sense of the word, if you do not meet the age gate, the age requirements, and show an ID that's valid, we card everyone. We yeah. need a valid right. driver's license, not a picture, not a photocopy, 100% compliance, so that we can make sure that we are following the laws, just like you do at the ABC store.
Something that does not happen if these compounds are illegal and people are getting it on a black market. The dealer in the back alley is not carding.
There's no age gating in black market.
Right.
There's no testing. Everything in our cannabinoid dispensary is third-party lab tested. That's part of the Farm Bill requirements.
Right.
This is what's driving, again, the incredible amounts of money. So I'm going to read a few things, throw out a few things, numbers here. And just if you would, imagine these not as a balance in a number accounting ledger. These are actual dollars because, of course, the cannabis industry as a whole, including myself, are discriminated against in the financial institutions because it's still considered federally legal. So all of this is cash. This is why if you have visited a dispensary in a legal state, you bring cash or you visit the ATM machine. Here is New York. So New York, just a few days ago, published their sales. If you had been listening to us over the last 3 years, you'll remember that in 2021, Governor Northam implemented legal adult sales that were to be implemented by 2024. Didn't happen. But very quickly after 2021 in July, New York came online and said, yes, we're going to go ahead and mandate legalized adult use sales as well. And here they are reporting their first total year where they have had all of their regulations in place and have functioned effectively. Last year, they raked in $1.5 billion in revenues. My goodness. That is because they allowed 260 retail locations stocking more than 500 brands of products, and all of these products contributed to the fact that they had enough cannabis sales to contribute a whole lot of money to the New York State coffers.
Could have been us.
$1.5 billion. Most of these sales were in the municipal areas because, of course, the municipalities are all free to decide whether they want it or not. So most of these were in densely populated areas of New York, Manhattan, Queens, Long Island. So these are your populations that are very densely using these products, and then they're racking up huge amounts of sales. And again, Virginia had an opportunity, and I don't know what happened to it, but it drove me out of Virginia, and I'm much, much happier because of that. Here's another fun fact. This is a number taken from a projection where medical marijuana sales are projected, and this is from MG Biz Factbook. Marijuana industry this year will add $123.6 billion to the U.S. economy this year. $124 billion is going to be added to the United States economy in cash because of cannabis sales. The projections are by 2030, which is only 4 years away, the industry will add upwards to $200 billion in cannabis sales. These are numbers that you cannot ignore. They have projected and hypothesized that for every dollar that is spent in an adult use shop and medical marijuana dispensary, an additional $2.50 circulates through the economy, much of which benefits the local economies. So talk about a return on your investment.
Yeah.
For every dollar that the consumer spends in one of the legal dispensaries, $2.50 returns back into the community in some way or another, either through taxes, excise taxes, through programs. Many of the tax revenue is implemented and rolled into, for instance, education in the schools. Schools in Colorado, if you haven't visited out there lately, are booming because they're using tax money from the dirty marijuana industry.
That number, by the way, is even more startling, $124 billion, because we still have, what, 10 to 15 states where it's not even legal medicinally?
Correct.
So there's 10 to 15 states generating zero.
Generating zero.
Think about how, I mean, you know, that number is only going to grow.
No pun intended.
This
is where the numbers don't lie. And we've spoken for over the years of the, you used to play that little cha-ching, right? The little cha-ching.
Yeah.
Because the money train in cannabis is huge. And again, we're thinking this is all in cash sales. Cash. Because right now, the cannabis businesses, and including mine, have to operate outside of the federally regulated FDIC banking system. And so that's why all of this money is, believe it or not, if you're driving around town, you might see some warehouses with some pretty intense security around them, and those are guarding the cash amounts, the pallets of cash stored from the cannabis sales. There you go. This is why, again, just a few days ago, Louisiana. So Louisiana is one of those states that is a little bit behind. They're trying to push legal adult use in the state. They already have medical in the state. It's very limited. But Louisiana, just a few days ago, announced that they wanted to push sales for legal adult use, saying that across the board, it could be a potential revenue stream for legalizing and taxing cannabis for adults. We are now seeing this transition to where the industries that are being threatened in 2022, Bloomberg Intelligence said that marijuana was a significant threat to the alcohol industry. And here we are in 2025. The alcohol industry is going, yep, we heard you. We're about to take it over. We want to take it over. So please let us have that privilege, Congress. While the states are going, yeah, we're cashing in, New York, Louisiana going, how can we get in on this action? Because it obviously is a great revenue generator for state as far as bringing money in, because cannabis is popular.
I've noticed.
Popular.
Popular. Potular. Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, hemphavenwellness.com, 252-340-3557 in Moyock, North Carolina at 726 Caratoke Highway. She's open Monday through Saturday for your consultations, Monday through Friday in-store, Saturday virtually, hemphavenwellness.com. And don't forget about the podcast that we do together, Dr. D and I, cannabisnursetruths.com, or wherever you get your podcast, just search for Cannabis Nurse Truths. We're just getting going. We got more on the way. News Talk 790 WNIS. If you want to join the show, 627-7979. We are live this hour. More with Dr. D coming up. Dr. D's favorite karaoke song. News Talk 790 WNIS, Dr. Denise Foster, Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Caratoke Highway, Moyock, North Carolina. Call her up, 252-340-3557. Her website is hemphavenwellness.com. Dr. Denise Foster is here. I'm Lee Foster. You're here. Join us if you like. 757-627-7979. More cannabis in the news, and we talk a lot about veterans because a great many of your customers that come to the shop are veterans.
Absolutely. We do military and veteran discounts every day. I'm the daughter of a veteran. I am married to a veteran.
Yes.
Several of our cannabis family and nurses are veterans, love to hire the veterans because, you know, they love to work in cannabis. So this is where many of our focus research has looked at how veterans are using cannabis, because even the VA is starting to realize that things like cannabis and even psilocybins, which I don't traffic in, right? I don't know anything about those, but the VA is starting to think, well, the veterans have a unique problem, right? They have been using pharmaceuticals and they don't seem to be working very well.
Yeah.
So veterans are a very important part of the conversation when we talk about cannabis. A newly published study, in part funded by you and I, taxpayer,
hey,
and released from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, they looked to see where are the medical marijuana patients and clinicians in seven focus states that offer medical marijuana, and they wanted to see what are these trends related to the prescribers, the recommenders who are now working with these veterans and helping them work with their medical marijuana needs. They found that there is a strong association between military veteran populations, among which are Hampton Roads and the Bedroom Communities. So there is a strong association between military veteran populations and higher rates of medical marijuana authorizing clinicians, meaning that those individuals are now more likely to be allowed to receive medical marijuana recommendations that are pretty much state-sponsored, either adult model or a medical model. And the physicians are now on board because they're now recommending and allowing or steering, if you would, the veteran community toward the dispensaries. The states included were interesting because they were a mix. You would think, oh, Colorado, California, right, the weed states. No, these were clinicians and patients from 262 counties across Delaware, Maine, Minnesota, New Hampshire, New York, Utah, and West Virginia. So they found that an average of 75.5 medical cannabis patients were existing per 10,000 residents, giving us a registration rate of about 0.8 of the population. That's not a lot. Doesn't seem significant. 0.8% of the population, but 75 medical cannabis patients per 10,000 residents. That is, again, part of the statistic I rattled off earlier, where 77% of our population, especially in these states, has access to some form of marijuana, in this case, medical marijuana, which Virginia has. Virginia probably wasn't included in this because Virginia's laws are just so messed up. It's hopeless until a certain somebody gets out of office. When we consider that all of these individuals and now clinicians like physicians are now steering and pointing people toward marijuana as an entity to treat or promote health and wellness, we're now looking again at what's the harm to this. The number one model in cannabis as medicine is harm reduction. We don't want to cause any more harm. We have enough harm in this world as there is. So this study published just a few days ago in the American Medical Association journal, JAMA Open Network Open, found that the frequency of marijuana use among adults in Canada increased slightly. So more people that they studied in Canada are using it in the years following nationwide legalization. But however, problematic misuse of cannabis saw decreases.
And when we talk about problematic misuse, this is people getting high and then getting behind the wheel or something like that.
Correct.
Or having a cannabis use disorder or things of that
substance
nature.
Substance use disorder.
These are the things that people always claim are going to happen if we legalize it. And as it turns out, not the case.
That's not the case. This was a longevity study. So they began this study in September of 2018. And this is significant because Canada federally nationwide legalized adult use and medical marijuana in October of 2018. So we've had almost 7-8 years of legal marijuana in Canada, and they continued the longevity study until October of 23. They wanted to examine how the consumption patterns followed after legalization and whether or not this was going to become a problem. Reefer madness, devil's harvest, right? You're just now an intoxicated, crazy lunatic
because
you're
using... This is
your
brain on drugs.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they found that among all of these participants, the mean proportion of days that they used cannabis increased by 0.35% per year. Less than 0.35% per year means that's barely a nudge, a blip on the radar.
Right.
Over the five-year study period, they saw a 1.75%. This means that the results suggest while increased use is occurring at a very slow, steady growth pattern, misuse is not occurring, and this includes all of the cannabis-type products, the vapables, the smokables, the edibles, and the beverages, which are available in Canada for adults over 21 and older. These are the arguments that the prohibitionists still consider. Do they read this research? I'm in this research every day. And I laugh at individuals who wag their finger at us and say, oh, problematic use. Everybody's going to become a stoner. The same thing, the same argument occurs with driving. This is a study that was just released again just a few days ago in the journal Variance. This was a study outside of the University of Maryland's Center for Environmental Science. They wanted to see what changes in the legal status of cannabis in both the United States and Canada affected traffic safety. So they did an in-depth 2023 analysis of both countries, and they found that the changes to the cannabis legalization laws were not associated with significant changes to traffic safety. The statistically significant impacts of legalization were not discovered. They did not find any message or any what we would call noise in the data. But they did find, however, that factors such as inclement weather and seasonal spikes in traffic, like in tourist seasons, those were the cause of more problematic accidents and injuries. Square that in your head. Cannabis was not even among the problems associated with increased traffic from tourists or seasonal, as well as inclement weather that could potentially impact traffic safety. These are the arguments that prohibitionists continue to use to continue prohibition. Once we know that these compounds are legal and available and regulated, we're asking for regulation, we're asking for safety data, we're asking for safe lab testing, we're asking for safe access to products and education on how to use them. Once we put this model into place with harm reduction, the data show that it is not coming, it's not coming, the worst fears of prohibitionists are not coming to bear. They're not turning into stoners, reefer madness. Although the use is increasing, and they're not having issues with traffic fatalities or traffic safety concerns. The research on the scientific realm is where it excites me the most, because as a nurse, we are here to heal our communities. We're here to help our communities heal themselves. Nursing made a paradigm is nursing, health, environment, and person, meaning that these four realms are where nurses seek to serve our patient population, either individually, community, or population-wide. This is why it's very exciting that finally we're back to the National Institutes of Health. They have launched just last week a federally backed, meaning you and I are now paying for it with our tax dollars, the Marijuana Resource Center for Cannabis and Cannabinoid Research. This means that the new paradigm for research at the federal level involving several NIH resource partners are going to focus on how these cannabinoids can be used for wellness. This is huge as far as population health is concerned. Didn't our previous Surgeon General come out sometime in January and say that alcohol itself was poison?
Yeah. Yes.
Third leading cause of preventable cancer deaths in the United States.
That happened, and people already forgot about it.
That's right. So now you can understand why the alcohol industry is very interested in switching their model over to something like this. In this new federal research cannabis research center, they are going to focus on cannabinoids in foods, and dietary supplements that can potentially contribute to people's health. The director of this this research institute, a man by the name of Donald Stanford, has said that the overall purpose of the center is to provide guidance on regulations, quality standards, and best practices. I welcome these regulations. I want to know guidance on quality standards and best practices. But the missions of the participating NIH institutes reflect why I am so excited about the long-term outcomes that are possible, Stanford said. Here's the money quote. He continues, "We all have family and friends who face diseases or conditions for which alternative treatments can be effective." And by alternative treatments, which one does he mean? Cannabis. Because the studies coming out about cannabis are nothing short of amazing from a researcher, bioethicist, physiologist, molecular science level. We have science now down to the molecular genetic level, RNA, DNA, how these compounds, and I'm including THC, but it is not the only one in the plant. There are over 150, with THC being the only cannabinoid to date that has been found to have intoxicating, impairing effects. The latest research that caused a huge ripple effect was just published about a month ago, and it was published in the journal Frontiers in Oncology, so you're already knowing where this is going, and this is about the cancer research. We have 88 years of research on how these compounds work, and study after study that focuses on cancer has indicated that every single compound, every single one of the 150 compounds in cannabis has an effect on cancer. So this particular study in the journal Frontiers in Oncology analyzed data from 10,641 peer-reviewed studies. The authors claim that this is more than 10 times the number in the next largest review of the topic. They wanted to do this meta-analysis because the research is all over the place. You're going to have some replication studies that say it work and some that say it don't. You're going to have some that say this amount is good and this amount is problematic. The confusion lies in the fact that we don't have standardized replication type studies because up till now it's been federally difficult to research cannabis. These authors of this study looked at this meta-analysis and they showed that for every one study that showed cannabis was not effective, there were three studies that showed it work. And in the field as rigorous as biomedical research, this isn't unusual to have this. This is 3-1. Every one study that it didn't work, three studies showed it did. So this 3-1 ratio is extraordinary because it leads to the understanding that this is a trend, and the trend includes compounds that are safe. They work with the human body, not against it, as in pharmaceutical models. The money quote here is from the head of the research at Whole Health Oncology Institute that led the study. His quote is that we expected controversy. What we found was overwhelming scientific consensus. It rivals the consensus found or exceeding that for many food and drug FDA-approved medications, meaning that it had more rigorous validity. There was more confidence in these types of studies that they said what they were going to do, that they helped people with cancer. They helped treat cancer symptoms. People benefited from using cannabis during their cancer diagnosis in some way or shape or form. Are we using this type of research in your oncology practices? I would say yes. Why do I say yes? Because several years ago, several oncology nurse navigators took my Cannabis 101 course. I call them my seeds. Now they are in oncology practices scattered throughout Hampton Roads. I won't say which ones, but we get referrals from these oncology practices now because of data and evidence that comes out like this. The National Cancer Institute last year estimated between 20 and 40% of people being treated for cancer are using cannabis products to treat the side effects and manage their condition. Almost half of cancer patients are now using cannabis as part of their treatment model. So I always encourage individuals, clients who come in and want to talk about it. One of the first questions we ask during a consultation is, have you spoken with your doctor about this, your nurse practitioner, your physician's assistant? Because you're allowed to discuss cannabis use as part of the treatment plan, even in the VA. The VA does have a model where, while they are not allowed to recommend it, you're not allowed to use it, obviously, on federal property that are associated with military institutions, you are encouraged to talk to your VA practitioners, and then they can incorporate that into your treatment plan because it is considered now a valid medication.
You don't have to be afraid to bring that up anymore.
You're not a stoner. You're not looked at, and you're not going to be going to the brigade. Yeah. You are actually more likely to get an, I don't know what it can do, but it can't hurt. So go give it a try if it's legal. And what we do in Hemp Haven is legal because it's all derived from hemp. The data coming out in all studies are really where the research is far ahead of the regulations that are so backwards, so focused on one compound, THC, for its intoxicating effects, and we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater because the other 149, obviously through studies like this one, show immense potential in many different chronic conditions like cancer.
She's Dr. Denise Foster once again, Hemp Haven Wellness. The website, hemphavenwellness.com. And we got a call coming in from Alan in Buckrow Beach. Hello, Alan. You're on WNIS. What's going on?
Hey, I'm loving the show, and I've learned a lot just from the show this afternoon. And I want to thank Hemp Haven, you know, for reaching out to veterans and offering to help the people, you know, that put their lives on the line for our country, not only home, but also abroad. But I totally agree with you that the hemp industry, cannabis industry, is definitely a direct, serious competitor these days with the alcohol industry and the pharmaceutical industry. And I might want to throw in the tobacco industry. But listen, I just want to say, I've learned so much today, and I just want to speak about going back in the day, but hemp and cannabis, I'm pretty sure, has been around forever. And I think back in the day, maybe still today in other countries, hemp, you know, is made of, like, rope is made of hemp. And I just want to say, everybody out there, honestly, right here from Buckrow Beach, I'd recommend anybody listening right now, if you have some questions about ailments and things, I think that you should contact Hemp Haven and just get some good advice. And
well,
I'll take
you
your
that.
Comments off the air.
Absolutely.
Wow. How about that?
Alan, you're so right. The fun fact is that hemp was legal in the United States. In the Jamestown Colony law books, our first colony in the United States, there is a law that mandates all colonists must grow hemp, half of which remained in the colonies to be used as trade and for its fiber, animal bedding, food, medicine. Then half of it was sent back to King George as part of our tax structure. Betsy Ross sewed the first version of the United States flag on hemp fabric. Yep. Thomas Jefferson wrote the first draft of the Constitution on hemp paper.
Yep.
Jefferson and Washington were plantation owners, and do you know what they grew on their plantation?
Hemp.
Yep. Jefferson is quoted as saying, make the most of the Indian hemp seed and sow it everywhere you can, while Thomas Jefferson says hemp is of the first necessity to the wealth and health of the country, the nation. Hemp has been around. It was used during World War II when the Japanese cut off the route from the Philippines. Then we were talking industrial hemp when the United States military themselves planted tens of thousands of acres of hemp in the 1940s to be used for packaging and rope. For instance, the ropes on the Constellation were made of hemp. So hemp has 50,000 plus industrial uses. Our focus at Hemp Haven is how do we use the cannabinoids like CBD that come from the hemp plant that now are being examined on how they benefit human health. help you promote wellness without causing additional harm, because the model is you're helping your body fix itself. This is not the pharmaceutical model. The pharmaceutical model is typically we block things synthetically, artificially, and your body begins to get a little upset over time. Think of some people that you may know that have been taking medicines for decades. Decades of use of synthetic pills and capsules filled with petrochemicals.
Yep.
Hemp comes from, the cannabinoids that come from hemp are made to interact with the human body. And this is something that they don't teach in medical, nursing, pharmaceutical schools. This is something where the renaissance of education is beginning to show hemp, the cannabinoids, the things that we can tease out of these compounds. That's where the magic, the wellness, the health is really found. It's not getting impaired. When I worked with medical marijuana patients, they loved that it helped with everything. They hate that it made them stoned. Now that we're able to take this from hemp, you don't have to have that effect at all.
Yeah. Yep. Have your cake and eat it too. Alan, thank you very much for the nice call. We really appreciate that. Dr. Denise Foster, I'm Lee Foster, Hemp Haven Wellness. HempHavenWellness.com is the website, 252-340-3557. She's in Moyock, North Carolina, just below the border, 726 Carrituck Highway. And with about a minute to go, Dr. D., what should we be thinking about until we talk to you again next month here on WNIS?
We love to talk cannabis with people, especially our older adult population. The number one population using medical marijuana in the United States today is age 62 and older. These are your old, hippies who were told in our generation, don't use it, drug brain on drugs. And now they're finding out it's legal and they can use it, but they just don't know how because, again, they don't want to get high. They just want to get healthy. And that's where you come talk to the cannabis nurses at Hemp Haven, and we help you figure it out. And even if it's right for you, because that's where we have to begin, is the safety,
that's
harm reduction.
Why the word is in your name, wellness, Hemp Haven Wellness. That's what it's all about. HempHavenWellness.com is her website, 726 Carrituck Highway, Route 168 in Moyock, North Carolina, 252-340-3557. She joins us once a month here on WNIS, so she'll be back with us in early June at 6 p.m. And check out the podcast in the meantime. Search for Cannabis Nurse Truths or head to CannabisNurseTruths.com. Hemp Haven, go see Dr. D.
To every word I say, every word I say.
The preceding program was sponsored and paid for by Hemp Haven, who's entirely responsible for its content.